Welcome back to the Answer of the Week audio blog, the most important audio blog you will hear all week on the internet.
Ever.
We're flipping things on its head this week, and instead of answering questions, we're going to review some huge books that came out. It was a really light week due to the holiday, but there were still a few worth talking about. So Joe Patrick and I are going to bounce back and forth discussing these, and again, not safe for work here, kiddies. Because we're not editing this one, because I don't have any goddamn time to edit two shows.
That's right. Oh, and be prepared. We are not holding back on spoilers on this.
There's going to be some huge spoilers. And if you didn't know what was going on, well, then somehow you live in a world without internet access. And you can't listen to this damn show anyway.
Congratulations to you.
Congratulations to you, even though you're not listening to the show right now.
But be aware, we are going to spoil big time Amazing Spider-Man 700, which is really the only book you care about.
Joey, let's start with Deathmatch, number one from Boom. This is Paul Jenkins and Carlos Magno. Magno, who's been doing a lot of work on the Planet of the Apes stuff for Boom.
Yeah, historically, I'm not a huge fan of Carlos Magno, but I have to say that this art is kind of fun.
I like Carlos Magno, and I like that this is different than what he's doing on Planet of the Apes. Planet of the Apes, he's been doing a good job on, but he's been doing more of a realistic, almost like digital handycam feel. I think kind of trying to match the feel of the old movies, sort of like what like Frank Avila was doing with it. And who was the other one that was drawing it?
Gabriel Hardman.
And this looks way more superhero to me. This looks more kind of slam bang, flashy superhero to me, and he's doing a great job.
Yeah, it's got an interesting feel. It's got a lot of shading techniques. It reminds me a little bit of Juan Jose Rip.
Yeah, a lot of stipple,
but less gross.
No one's exploding. Yeah, everybody's innards seem to stay inside their body for the most part.
Let's back up real quick and talk about the concept. This is essentially, it's Avengers Arena, it's Battle Royale, it's The Hunger Games, it's superhero deathmatch.
It is packed full of Superman analogs, Batman analogs, Wonder Woman analogs. I mean, this is recognizable hero tropes.
Well, and I think that it has to be, or else who cares who wins in a deathmatch.
Right.
But correct me if I'm wrong, I think this is actually voted on by the fans.
Well, no, the fans get to predict who they think is going to win.
Oh.
And if they call it right, they get a special cover that the retailers can order, which is a lot of fun.
Okay, I see.
Yeah, they had like a pool, and it's set up in the back. There's a big, it starts with all the characters' names.
Well, there's the bracket, yeah.
Yeah, and it's a big bracket. So it's sort of like March Madness with heroes murdering each other.
Sure.
Well, heroes and villains. There's villains there, too.
Right. So I don't necessarily think this was an idea he shopped around to Marvel or DC, but I think they have to be analogs of those characters so that we can have some sort of connection to them. The kind of point of view character is this guy named Dragonfly, who was just a normal man. He's the everyman. He's like Spider-Man.
Yeah, he just has sort of like energy blasting powers, I guess.
Yeah, I mean, he's got vague like insecty stinger powers.
Yeah,
or whatever.
Something like that.
And
he's sort of the male Wasp.
You know, he is the first character to go into the deathmatch, and he kills Superman's sidekick.
Yeah, they like murders the hell out of him too.
Yeah, and there's this cool device where they don't remember, like they get their memories removed and then put back every time they enter and leave the arena.
Right. Like for instance, he does not know why he killed the guy because he's never killed anyone before.
Right.
Like he's been that golden boy hero that's always just done the job, and he served with several other hero teams and stuff, and it never revealed who he was. You know, it was just like doing the job for the sake of doing it. He goes into this arena and murders a hero, murders the hell out of him.
Right. And I think that it is a lot more interesting than it has any right to be.
Yeah.
It sounds like it would be gimmicky, and it is kind of gimmicky, but it's written and drawn in such a nice, compelling way. And it's Paul Jenkins who we have been very critical of in the past.
We have.
And it is nice to see Paul Jenkins come back with a book that is really enjoyable.
I also like how it hits the ground running. There's no bullshit here.
Yep.
Just
it's
there are heroes. You get it. They served on this team. They served on that team. Here we go.
It's it's Secret Wars if Secret Wars had a bracket.
Yeah. And people actually got killed.
Yeah. I'm giving this one a buy it. It's only a dollar. I mean, what do you really have to lose?
Yeah, you're a real asshole if you don't pick this one up, because it's 32 pages for a dollar.
You hear that, John? You're a real asshole, John Luttrell.
He didn't pick it up?
He's not interested. Oh, he flipped God. Through it and wasn't interested.
Oh, you big baby.
He didn't have a dollar to throw at Deathmatch.
You know what? I'm going to send you mine, John. Let's move right along to Mara, the new book from Image by Brian Wood with art by Ming Doyle. This is the story of Mara Prince, who is one of the most established and famous athletes of future dystopic America?
Sure.
It was kind of unrecognizable, but recognizable at the same time. This is Brian Wood making a big socio-political statement.
Yeah, there's a lot here about
like there were major wars.
The cult of celebrity and...
There were major wars that ravaged the world as we know it. And somehow the world's governments got together and they said, we're not going to be able to survive like this. So let's take international sports, essentially, like the equivalent of the NFL, and move it to this world-dominated entertainment product that will keep people busy, so they're not fighting.
Well, yeah, I mean,
they're still fighting.
It was that is just all backdrop to kind of explain how it's elevated to this level, how sports culture is elevated to this level. It's like, you know, bread for the masses,
right?
It's like gladiator fights or
bread
whatever.
And circuses,
and, yeah, exactly. It's just a way to distract humanity from the terrible, awful reality that's going on.
And the solicit here is that Mara is beautiful. She's instantly recognizable. She's loved by everyone. She's this amazing volleyball player that was genetically raised to be an amazing volleyball player. She's 17. She's at the top of her game. And then she develops sort of a weird time-walking power.
She's got some kind of teleportation
on
or
live
time
TV.
Freezing.
I think she slowed time down and like walked over and did something on national television.
And
they say, we slowed the frame rate down to 1/5, and look at this. Look how fast she's moving, you know?
I see that Brian Wood is trying to do what he's trying to do here. I'm not that into it, I have to say.
Yeah, there's a really big overlying story. And maybe when all this is said and done, we're going to look back on it and go, wow, that was great. But as far as a first issue,
it didn't grab me.
It didn't grab me at all. I'm not saying he missed the mark. He got the point across. I get it.
Yeah, I mean, it's not like the book is actually about volleyball.
No. It's about way more than
that. It's about deeper themes than that. I had a hard time sinking my teeth into it. Part of it is that I have tried. I'm sorry. I am not a fan of Ming Doyle.
See, I like Ming Doyle.
I am not a fan.
I really like Ming Doyle. I think she does a fantastic job.
I don't
And
like
I really
it.
Like the coloring here, too, by Jordi Belair.
I love Jordi Belair.
The coloring is beautiful. Just the cover alone, red, blue, and white. I mean, it's a really stark-looking, really good-looking book. But I think it just got lost in its own... You know what it is? Where Brian Wood succeeded with DMZ and has succeeded with The Massive is he set up his big background story. Like DMZ, there was a major war. The American government's been pushed back, you know, to New York Island, essentially, and go. And The Massive is there was a huge environmental collapse, and this is what it's like to be an environmentalist in that world. This is so big in socio-political background that I don't know if he could impress it enough as to how what this story is actually about. And instead, I know volleyball is not the featured character or what the story is about, but it's featured so heavily here. That's I just kind of got bored. I just got lost in it.
Yeah, and for me, that's not the bother at all. I mean, I could easily say I don't care about sports culture, but it's not really about sports culture.
No, I mean, I know
it's not. The fact that she's an athlete is kind of secondary. She could have been a movie star.
I suppose.
It could be anything. It's just the point is that because of the situation of the world, this particular activity that she is involved in has a status, like, it's if NASCAR became so important to people that they their lives revolved around it. And
it does.
That's the story of Mara.
I was just at
the pressures of
a tacky
that
Christmas
on.
House in Virginia where they actually had an entire NASCAR room. And I guarantee that dude's life revolves around NASCAR.
But it's about the you know, it's about this character and the pressures of that life, you know, being like the Michael Phelps of this sport.
Right. And it was,
if all anyone ever cared about was swimming.
And it was cool. They did like things where she wore like a headset and they told her while she was playing, you know, she'd be like, switch to this camera because what I'm about to do is awesome.
She was editing her own clips
as she played. Really interesting, showing how they're their own agents and stuff. But I just didn't care.
It's very interesting. It's got a lot of ideas. It just didn't hook me.
I think maybe it has too many ideas.
That could be. I'm giving it a skim it.
I got to go skim it as well. I like a lot of the ideas that's going on here. I like the art. I like the color. But the story, I think, was just too big.
I'll stick with it. And like you said, maybe with subsequent issues, it'll read.
Yes.
It'll flesh itself out a little bit more.
I trust Brian Wood. I trust him.
But yeah, for now, it just didn't grab me. Let's switch over to DC, which saw two big releases. The first two chapters of the Throne of Atlantis crossover between Justice League and Aquaman. We'll start with Justice League number 15, the debut of Ivan Reis as regular artist. Welcome aboard, Ivan. I loved it. I thought it was a breath of fresh air.
Well, let's set it up first. Let's set it up. This is the Throne of Atlantis storyline, which is setting up a crossover between Justice League and Aquaman.
Yeah, how it starts.
Probably to propel the sales in Aquaman a little bit.
I said all of that stuff already.
Well, I mean, let's set up. What is it about?
The book opens with an accidental attack on what the United States thinks is just empty ocean.
Well, maybe. It was a missile test.
It was a missile test, but the missiles launched themselves.
They changed direction. Something went wrong, and obviously someone did it.
The launch, they were preparing to do a missile test, and 40 minutes early, the missiles launched themselves.
Yeah, but somebody,
into a place in the middle of the ocean.
Someone is obviously behind it.
Clearly sabotage. Yes. And just coincidentally, they happened to detonate right outside of Atlantis.
Whoops.
Which Atlantis obviously deems an act of war.
They didn't do
and attacks the United States.
Sure.
Geoff Johns has been foreshadowing in Justice League that there is a kind of a villainous organization preparing to make a move.
The Legion of Doom.
Maybe.
Oh, I guarantee it.
You don't get...
$200. I'll put it on the table right now.
The Injustice League is what I think they'll call them.
I'm going to Legion of Doom because he loves that Super Friends bullshit so much.
Yeah, but the Legion of Doom and the Injustice League are essentially the exact same thing.
I know. I'm saying he calls them the Legion of Doom. Boom!
So, you don't get any hints of who is responsible, but clearly, this ship has been tampered with, and attacked Atlantis, the Atlanteans have lost their minds.
Yeah, they respond in kind.
Led by Ocean Master,
yeah,
Aquaman's brother, using plans that Aquaman himself wrote about what to do in the event of an attack by the surface world when he was king of Atlantis.
How to wipe them out, basically.
Yeah, and so they flood the eastern seaboard. Metropolis is underwater. Gotham City is underwater. And
which forever ends that argument that Metropolis was that Gotham City was Philadelphia or something.
Yeah. obviously, they're both on the East Coast.
Yeah. It's like Boston and New York, more or less.
And so this is the first part of that story. Oh, and did we mention that somebody has also released the horrifying cannibalistic trench monsters from the deep, dark hole Aquaman buried them in? And they're scary as hell.
They're luminescent. They're gross.
It's just lipless. Tooth, terrible piranha
and
monsters.
They're hungry.
Yeah. So this is Ivan Reis's first issue, and it's gorgeous, as you would expect.
It's perfectly drawn.
And as much attention as Jim Lee gets, this book looks better than it has.
I totally agree.
Since
Ivan
the
Reis
first
looks
issue.
Way better than Jim Lee here.
He was born to draw this book, and I think that the visual storytelling has elevated the writing. I think that this book is better. I think this is the best issue so far of this series.
I'll give you that. I think this is the best issue so far of the series. And maybe
this is what I want when I read the Justice League.
Maybe I'm just too upset about where DC is right now, and that drug me down a little bit. But I still didn't feel like this was my Justice League. You know,
but this felt more like my Justice League than anything that's ever come out from the New 52.
I'll give you that. And I'm giving it a buy it. I liked it. It was fun. They did a good job, and they didn't concentrate as much on the characters being weirdos or hating each other or being snarky, and just focused on big bad thing happens, the Justice League's dealing with it.
And it's not all action. You get some nice moments with Superman and Wonder Woman kind of developing their relationship, and Cyborg and his dad. And
I don't care about Superman and Wonder Woman's relationship.
I'm all right with seeing where it goes.
I don't care.
There was a great scene in here where Cyborg is talking to his dad about gearing up to go investigate this problem under the sea, and his dad says, well, you know, we've been ready to fit you with this breathing apparatus stuff forever. And Cyborg says, yeah, and I'll have to get rid of my one remaining human lung to do it.
Yeah.
So his dad is just like, well, let me put more parts on you. And Cyborg is like clinging to his humanity because he already doubts whether or not he's really alive. And I just, I'm starting to appreciate it a little better. The Shazam backups continue with wonderful art by Gary Frank.
He's so good. He's so good.
I love the fact that Billy Batson is not just immediately the best hero ever.
No, he kind of sucks.
He's like kind of breaking into ATMs. Yeah. And
he's instantly like, well, I'm an adult now. I can't hang out with like you kids anymore. Yeah. Like,
it's really good. I'm giving this a huge buy it. I think that if you've been avoiding the Justice League, this is a good place to jump on. I really enjoyed it.
I agree. Moving on to Aquaman, number 15, part 2 of the Throne of Atlantis. I read this out of order.
Oh.
Because I'm an idiot.
Oh. This is as good as it ever is.
I don't have a lot to say
here. The writing is nice, but I've never thought that Aquaman has been bad.
No, I'm saying Aquaman maintains. Mm. Yes. I'm saying it's definitely doing great. Who drew this?
This is notable because it is the first issue with Paul Pelletier as the regular artist. Yes.
And I
love Paul Pelletier.
I think it's Pelletier.
Maybe.
He's French.
But I like to say Pelletier.
Fair enough. I love him too, and I didn't notice a beat in the art. Like
Ivan Reis is a tough act to follow, but Paul P. is a wonderful artist.
Paul P.
Paul P. And I just really enjoyed it visually. It's fantastic. There's not much more to say. It's part two. It's Aquaman. Aquaman is still good.
Yeah, Aquaman is.
They did not replace Ivan Reis with a bad artist.
One of the few shining books in the DC relaunch. It's still a buy it. It's still good stuff.
Yep. And I like the fact that Aquaman is trying to do things his way. And the Justice League don't trust him to do it right, and so they show up, and he doesn't react in the way that they might want him to. That'll be interesting.
Let's move on to the elephant in the room, the thing that you were all threatening to murder Dan Slott about this week.
Whew.
Amazing Spider-Man 700, the final issue of Amazing Spider-Man.
Ever.
Ever.
Surely this will be the last time
over
we see Spider-Man again.
Goodbye. So, I want to start with the cover, the collage cover.
Huh.
All these collage covers that Marvel did, they did one for Iron Man, one for Cap, one for...
They did?
Oh, yeah, there was a bunch of them. Some of them were variants. The Amazing Spider-Man one was not a variant, but some of them were like 1 in 25 variants, I think. And I can't summon the guy's name that did the collage cover, but it is amazing. It is so good.
I bet it's in here.
I love all these collage covers, and this one is so cool. It's like Spidey's eye and his head, and the red from his head is a bunch of different Spider-Men like drawn by different artists through the years, and so on and so, like the black around his eye is all Venom and the white is black and white like stuff. Oh, it's just an amazing cover. And I realize I keep saying amazing.
The main cover was done by M.R. Garcin.
So cool. So
and
cool.
It is great. You know, our friend Joel, his dad Jeff Ballard, does something very similar to this using garbage.
Yeah, he made like, you did like a Hulk one.
Not garbage, but like pieces of packaging. And and he does a great job of finding like various shades of colors to make shadows and light. And he's done great collages of the Hulk's.
You can find his work on Etsy, by the way.
Yeah, the Hulk, Captain America, and did he do a Spider-Man? The Thing. And hidden in there are like, and there's a little Hulk. You know?
Yeah.
But you look at it and it's like, that's a package for green beans.
Yeah. Right next to a Hostess bag or something, you know?
And that's what this reminds me of. But like you say, it's a wonderful cover.
Let's
it's
get
very,
to it.
Very
Let's
gorgeous.
Get to it. Enough cover talk. All right. This is the conclusion.
Yes. This is the final part of the Dying Wish storyline that has been going since Amazing Spider-Man 698. Spoiler alert, as though you didn't already know, Dr. Octopus is in charge of Peter Parker's body, and Peter Parker is in charge of Dr. Octopus's body, and he has minutes to live.
It sort of reminded me, I can't remember what Cerebus issue it was, but there was a character that was supposed to be like the Tick that was like climbing this wall, and the whole time he was climbing, it was like his ribs were broken and his back was snapped and he felt his liver fail, you know, and he's like, my eyes are bleeding, you know, like it was the whole time. Peter Parker is in Doc Ock's body running around like going, oh my God, you know, like I can feel stuff failing. I'm dying here.
Yeah, I can't. I just lost vision in my right eye.
And he's rounded up like Hydro Man, the Scorpion.
And Trapster.
Trapster and Electro is there too.
No.
No?
No Electro.
It's a Shocker?
Nope.
I thought there was an electric guy there.
Trapster, Scorpion, Hydra Man. Just okay. Three.
To come and basically break him out of prison to give him a chance to try and find Dr. Octopus, who was in his body. They had a body switch thing that took place with a special octopod. And it was actually really well written because the robot was only able to do what it did after Peter used Dr. Octopus's technology against him.
Right.
Previously at the end of the Ends of the Earth storyline.
It goes all the way back to Amazing Spider-Man 600.
Oh, wow.
100 issues Dan Slott has been planning this.
Wow.
And now that has gone by very fast in the scheme of things because of the...
They're getting like 4 issues a month.
Yeah. But the seeds were planted way back then. And this is... people are hating on this, but I fucking loved it.
I think people are hating on it because whenever there's any book like this with a lot of buzz and they're going to do something... Because if you think about it, what do people say they hate the most about comics? They're like, I hate comics that don't count. Nothing ever happens. This is a waste of my money. There is nothing going on here. And then when something really big does come up and they say, something's going to happen, it's going to alter the character forever... What immediately follows that? I hate it when they change these characters and do this just to sell comics. Da, da, da. I mean, it's just bullshit internet hate because I'm sorry, this book is almost perfectly executed.
But that's not all they're saying. They're saying that this the body switch thing is a tired, bad writing, that it's a hack device.
I disagree.
And I think that it is super fun. It is like... touches on like the heart of comic books, the idea of these crazy...
More than that, I would argue it touches on the wacky Silver Age Spider-Man stories that people grew up on, that used to love, with these kind of ridiculous, wacky villains doing ridiculous, wacky things, you know?
Right.
But at the same time, it still has a gravitas to it because guess what? Peter dies in the end.
He loses the fight.
Yes, this is not some bullshit body switch where Kirk Cameron and Arthur, you know, spend a day in each other's bodies and then everything goes back, you know, in the end.
Great reference.
I don't know why I went straight to that one.
Wow.
But, like, this has real ramifications. This isn't bullshit. It's not a hacking device. They kill the main character in the end.
Yeah, and it's, you know, it's, like you say, it's... people love Dan Slott for writing Spider-Man stories that feel like Spider-Man, and then they turn around and hate him for writing the most Spider-Maniest story ever published.
This is as Spider-Man as it gets. This is the clone saga, you know, like,
well, don't,
that we
all
loved.
All right, hold on. Don't compare it to the
But
clone
it is
saga.
A good example of something that split people right down the middle and said, I either loved it or I hated it, but guess what? You can't say it's not completely Spider-Man.
Yeah.
It's not this whacked out, fun, Silver Age superhero story. That's what we should get when we read Spider-Man, and it's here. Everybody bitched when Spidey and Mary Jane were torn apart by the devil or whatever happened. Well, guess what? He got them back together just for you. Only it's Dr. Octopus.
Yeah, which is a whole other discussion because it's kind of rapey.
But it's fun. They're tearing the rug. They're tearing the rug right out from under you. You know, I love it.
But it's just a fun roller coaster ride.
Yes.
And I've heard other complaints from people online and at Legend, you know, saying, well, it's a gimmick. We all know that in 6 months, a year, 2 years, you know, insert time period here, that it's going to go back.
Of course it will.
Of course it will. It's like you're saying that like you've never read a comic, like it's a bad thing. Like, when did it become such a bad thing to just enjoy the ride?
I have a better question. What's not a gimmick?
Yeah, right.
What is not a gimmick in comic books? I mean, anymore. Really, we just talked about Deathmatch, which we really enjoyed. That's a gimmick in and of itself. Bunch of superheroes fighting each other. It's been going on forever. We talked about Secret Wars during that. They're all gimmicks.
Yes. Fun spin.
Is it a gimmick?
On a classic.
Yes.
Freaky Friday plotline.
Is it a gimmick? Yes. Is it well executed? Absolutely.
Is Peter Parker really dead? No.
No fucking
way.
Do
I care? No.
No, it was, but at the end of the day, this was fun to read. Is it the best comic book I've ever read? No. Nowhere near it.
It's got gorgeous art. Umberto Ramos is at the top of his game.
He has gotten a lot better, and I have not loved him for a while. This does look really good.
I think that this is his best issue to date.
And I will say, you want to talk about a guy that's just a machine that can crank out art? Umberto Ramos does not miss issues. He cranks this shit out.
I want to talk about the fun things really quick. Like, you get a lot of touching moments. You get Peter in heaven, or, you know, he's hallucinating or whatever.
Yeah, somewhere.
And because Doc Ock's body, like, goes into cardiac arrest.
Yeah.
And he is suddenly on his block in Queens, surrounded by everybody that's ever died during his tenure as Spider-Man. And if you were a longtime Spider-Man fan, it was a feast for the eyes.
Yeah, it was fantastic.
Because they don't name everybody, but I was able to identify several characters that they do not name.
You can tell Dan Slott and Humberto Ramos have paid attention and done their homework.
And you get a nice moment where he kind of has a talk with Uncle Ben. You get a great reunion between Jonah Jameson and his father, reuniting, reconciling after some time. I love the fact that now that Peter Parker is not in charge of Spider-Man, that Jonah has come around.
Yeah.
It's like, I was so wrong about this selfless hero.
Like, Peter's dead and gone. And now J. Jonah Jameson's like, what have I
He's
done?
He's like the champion of Spider-Man now. It's just so much fun.
Well, and everything that Doc Ock does in Peter's body, like taking all his loved ones and putting them in one place and everything to hold them there. It's all stuff that Spider-Man probably would have done. And in doing it, he doesn't even realize, like, well, I'm holding them hostage or whatever.
It makes it look like he's keeping them safe.
It makes it look like he's keeping them safe. And in doing so, he realizes, like, towards the end, when he starts to flash into Peter's memories and shit, and, like, remembering feelings that he had for Aunt May when they got married a long time ago.
Almost got married.
Like, yeah. I mean, it's so well executed because, he accidentally becomes a good guy and does it through the sheer, like, not even will, but through the idea of who Peter Parker is.
Right. Doc Ock has Peter's memories.
He has his instant karma where he sees his memories. He sees his uncle dying. He sees Gwen Stacy dying.
He kind of relives these seminal Spider-Man moments in his own mind. And you get the sense that Peter's last act on Earth is to convince Dr. Octopus that he can be a better man.
Not even convince him. His last act being alive is to save Otto Octavius.
He
saves Otto Octavius.
He is Doc Ock's Uncle Ben.
Yeah, essentially.
Just like last year when Peter died in Ultimate Spider-Man and Peter Parker became Miles Morales' Uncle Ben.
Yeah.
They've done it again here. And
there is a great scene where Spider-Man is standing over Doc Ock, and I'm not going to keep saying Peter in Spidey's body, or, you know, Peter and Doc Ock's body.
At this point, you know what I mean.
But Doc Ock is in Spider-Man's body, standing over his old beat-up body, and he says, "You were just some kid. You were just some kid doing it because you thought you were supposed to do it. You know, you weren't my nemesis. You weren't any of these horrible things I made you out to. And I turned into a monster because I was so angry at you. I thought he's reflecting how intelligent he was and always considered himself. And it turns out he was just chasing some kid around the whole damn time who was genuinely probably the sweetest guy on the planet. And in that moment, Otto Octavius becomes Spider-Man.
Yeah. And this could have gone two ways. I thought that either we'd get Superior Spider-Man would be a story about redemption, or it would be about Doc Ock actually pretending to be a hero.
Yeah.
Thunderbolt style, like back in the 90s.
Yeah, but he's secretly a bad guy.
And that halfway through, somebody would figure out that he's not really Spider-Man.
Right.
And then the story, you know, would take a turn. And I was on board for either. I think it's just going to be a fun ride, and who cares about the cynical, it's not going to last. Of course it's not going to last.
Nothing lasts.
Amazing Spider-Man 2, the movie, comes out in 2 years, or a year.
Yeah, so we've got some time to have fun with this.
Let's just enjoy it for what it is. It's a fun story. It's got great art. Superior Spider-Man looks really good, and I am very excited about it.
Yeah.
I'm giving this a huge buy it.
Huge buy it for me as well.
Oh, and we didn't even talk about the backups. This is an $8 comic. It's over 100 pages long. It is not packed full of reprints.
No.
Which used to be Marvel's MO.
Yeah, no, it's all there's like three backup stories.
There are two backup stories. One by J.M. DeMatteis and Giuseppe Camuncoli, and one by Jen Van Meter and Stephanie Buscema. And
which is Sal Buscema's granddaughter, I believe.
Both of them are fun. Oh, and Sal Buscema inks the Cam and Coley art. So, I mean, this...
Who is the old guy in that?
It's just some guy. It's just a metaphor. But it's all content, no reprint, and there's a lot of behind-the-scenes stuff. A huge, lengthy, Bendis-level letters page with every answer answered by Stan Lee. And then you get a bunch of testimonials from celebrities and creators about how much Spider-Man has changed their lives. It's a wonderful package. And the
cover gallery of every it's amazing every cover. Spider-Man.
Yeah. It's just, like, for $8, it's all content. It was a great book. No reprint.
It was fun as hell. It was a great book. If you hate it, you're trying to hate on it. I'm sorry, but you're just trying to hate on it. That's it. And if you want to be that guy, go ahead. But you're not adding anything to the discourse. Sorry.
So buy it from both of us.
And it leads perfectly into Avenging Spider-Man 15.1, which I'm going to say the most underordered book of the week. It's already going for like $10 or $15 on eBay.
Yeah, because
everybody thought it was a flashback issue. In previews, it was solicited as a flashback issue.
Kind of, yeah.
And then it turns out it's not a flashback issue at all.
It is much in the same way that a $6.99.1 is really
Morbius number one.
Like Morbius number zero.
Right.
And that issue from a couple years back was the Venom setup. This is Superior Spider-Man number zero.
And I think they would have been better served calling it Superior Spider-Man number zero and putting it out on the same week. I think they would have been much better served doing that.
Well, maybe, but
regardless, Christopher Yost writes this, and it's great.
Paco Medina does the art.
And he is amazing as usual. Paco Medina is fantastic. Like, one of my favorite Spidey artists.
And so this is Doc Ock having defeated Spider-Man, deciding to be better, to kind of retool and rebrand Spider-Man and re-equip him to do it his own way.
But also still having these moments where he does get all Dr. Octopus and he does get all kind of, you know.
That's
like,
what I love.
Yeah.
That's what I love is the idea that even though he's going to make a go at being a hero and he's in Peter's body, deep down, he's still Doc Ock.
Yeah.
And he talks like him.
Yeah, he does. He does. And it's a really good companion piece to $7.99 because they go in and touch on why the body switch worked, what happened with it, how the plan was. So if you didn't read Amazing Spider-Man 600 or you weren't around 100 years ago, or, pardon me, 100 issues ago or whatever, it sums it up really well.
Yeah, it's really all you need to get ready for the new Spidey book. This is a great read. I'm giving this one a buy it.
Yeah, I am too. It was a lot of fun.
And real quick, touching on, this is not the first appearance of the Superior Spider-Man. That honor went to last week's issue of Daredevil.
What?
Which we did not talk about.
What?
It's just like a last page cameo.
Oh.
Setting up, you know, next month's Daredevil.
Okay.
Where Daredevil's girlfriend, the district attorney, Foggy Nelson, for a while there, everyone was convinced that Matt Murdock had lost it.
Right.
And so Foggy, in a moment of weakness, confessed to Matt's girlfriend. Yeah. You were right. He is Daredevil and he's losing it and I can't handle this on my own.
He's like, don't tell anybody. And she was like, I am part of an ongoing criminal investigation. Yeah,
okay. And so the last issue of Daredevil has her talking to somebody in the shadows. I need your help. You need to like help me bring him in. Help me get him to listen to the reason. Please, you're the only one he'll listen to. Please help me. And then they reveal that it's Spider-Man and he goes, I understand. I understand what you need. I will find Daredevil, and I will crush him. And the last panel is her going, oh, thank you. Wait, what? And it's Doc Ock, it's Superior Spider-Man. Right. Oh, man, it was fun.
See, and this whole idea, this is going to be so much fun. Spider-Man, he's got an Avengers membership card.
Yeah.
He knows everybody. He's on the inside now. You know, like,
and what I'm reading from like interviews and stuff is that after Hickman's first storyline is over, he's going to be the Spider-Man in Hickman's Avengers.
That's awesome. That's awesome. I think this is going to be so much fun.
And I just don't get it. I understand if you think it's cheesy, and it's a little cheesy. But it's fun.
You know what else is cheesy? Getting bit by a radioactive spider and getting spider powers. Okay, come on. Get over it. This is comics. It's all cheesy.
It's a great wild ride, and I'm excited for it. Bottom line, I think Dan Slott pulled it off.
I totally agree.
And I can't wait for what's to come. And, you know, there's nothing better to say about it than that.
I totally agree. Thanks for joining us, guys, for another Answer of the Week. Next week, we'll be back with our regularly scheduled programming, seeing as the holidays are over. Hope you have a happy and safe New Year. The end.
Waka, waka, waka.
Waka, waka.